How's it going, everybody? Pete and Rob back with you here on NHL Fantasy on Ice on this Monday morning, June 22nd. We're getting really deep into the month of June here. How's it going, Robbie?
It's going well, Pete. Some things are opening up in the city today, so I'm excited to see what shakes out. And yeah, another week closer to potentially playing some playoff hockey.
Looking forward to it, man. And yeah, we have a lot of good stuff on the show today. We're going to start off with some bounce back candidates here, but we're diving really deep, right? I mean, there's nothing else going on right now. So you and I mean, especially you with your analytical previews, like you're really jumping into each series, even the round robin full throttle right now, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I just wanted to say, this is out of left field, by the way. This just came to me when you said the analytics piece. I was doing a deep dive last week on these Eastern Conference seeding teams. Right. And I just wanted to say, speaking of bounce backs, Braden Holtby is a guy that I think I got to lead the conversation off with. I looked at his road numbers. He's got some of the most road wins in the NHL this season, surprisingly. So I think when you're looking at bounce backs in fantasy postseason pools, I mean, you brought up another great one before the show started, and Bobby Ryan a few seasons ago with the Ottawa Senators. I mean, you got to go off the board for some of these guys. In Holtby's case, he's got the postseason success track record. But nonetheless, I mean, you really got to throw away the regular season here, I think, for like 70, 80% of these guys and not look back.
And that's why if you look at our top 25 goalie rankings, which are on NHL.com/fantasy right now, we did all the positional rankings last week. So excited to get to all of that in more detail today. But you look at it, Braden Holtby, number 7, ahead of, say, a Carter Hart and a Jacob Markstrom. I mean, on paper in the regular season, like Markstrom was a stud and Holtby was a fantasy dud. But I mean, Holtby has the playoff track record, has a very safe team. And yeah, you throw it away, like you said, even to Matt Murray, we had him just outside the top 10. But really, when you think about it, you kind of erase anything you've seen recently and fall back on what you've come to know about Matt Murray and Braden Holtby deep into the past postseasons.
And for anyone just listening to this episode as a standalone, just to give a little clarification, the reason why I'm hyping up these road stats so heavily, whether it's forwards, D, or goalies, is because it's going to be played at a neutral site, which is going to be like a road game. Obviously, you're not going to have the rowdy, you know, fan base there, but nonetheless, I think the road stuff is important. So just to kind of give you the stats here for goalies, Frederik Andersen led the league in road wins with 16. Vasi and Carey Price and David Rittich were tied for second. Vasi, Price, and Rittich for 15. And then third, we have Georgiev, Hellebuck, and Holtby. All of those goalies that I just mentioned paid dividends in fantasy one way or another. And I think going back to our show last week, Pete, when I made the case, hey, put a shekel on the Habs, there you go. There's another incentive for you to maybe up that $100 bet and make it a $200 bet. I'm not saying you're going to win that. I'm not saying they're going to win that series. But the numbers are suggesting that the Habs aren't bad on the road right there with Pittsburgh. And Carey Price is one of the best road goalies in the NHL.
Hey, man, I like that Freddie Andersen stat. Way too many people are super down on Freddie Andersen. You know that I love that player for a long time. And his playoffs, he's like right in the middle, like we've said. He's not where you can put all the blame on him from previous years, but he's been good enough where if you think about, like, what was Binnington's save percentage last year in the playoffs? Wasn't it like 915 or something? I mean, you can win the cup with a 915 save percentage. It's not unheard of. So, yeah, those are really telling, especially for David Rittich. I mean, when we start to look at, depending on your format, some of the lowest goalies that are going to be available, Rittich didn't have a bad year, but I feel like he's going to be totally bottom of the barrel, overlooked. Nobody's picking the Flames. I honestly haven't heard one person pick the Calgary Flames to win that series, but I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. So, yeah, and Rittich is totally off the radar now.
Now, what about a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky, Pete, who had a disastrous regular season in fantasy? He finished with 11 road wins for the Panthers, which isn't that far off from being in the top 10 of that stat. Do you see any appeal of Bobrovsky? I know we'll use the Senators as a great example here when they made it to the Cup Final or the Eastern Conference Final against Pittsburgh that one year. That team came out of nowhere. I mean, that team was not that deep. They were not dominant during the regular season. They kind of flew under the radar then, but then, you know, turned a lot of heads in the postseason. Do you see that maybe being the Panthers this year with Bob and Nett?
Yeah, I think we're past the point where you can look at Bob and say he fails in the playoffs after what happened last year. So, and I know this year was a disaster after he signed the big contract, but like Sergei Bobrovsky, to me, like we've been having the debate all season long, Bobrovsky or Varlamov. And I know we were both on the fence about it, and Davey too, when we were making our rankings. I think 2/3 of the vote went to Varlamov, including mine. But Bobrovsky can definitely win that series. And then if you even look the next round, like say the Flyers are matched up, I mean, say the Panthers are matched up against the Flyers, they could win that series too. So you never know. I think Dan Rosen called the Panthers a sleeper team. And, you know, we've thought that in previous years and certainly entering this season. So I could see it. I like Bob's sneaky bounce back appeal for the playoffs.
I guarantee you right now on this show, there's no way that Bob is going to have below a 900 save percentage in the qualifying round here. Think about the perfect opponent. If you could pick an opponent any more perfectly than New York Islanders, show me one. That, if you need to find your game as a goalie, that's the team you want to play. That's not a shot at the Islanders. That's a fact. That team is sleepy when it comes to offense. So, Bob, be careful. He's, if he has at least a 9-10 save percentage in that series, they are winning the series. And then watch out. Go back to last year with Columbus. Bob was hot. He beat that Lightning team, made some big saves when it mattered. And the New York Islanders, last time I checked, they are not the Tampa Bay Lightning.
No, they're not, most certainly, offensively speaking. So, yeah, I think bounce back goalies is a really big trend. And one that's much deeper down the line is Pekka Rinne. I'm a little sour on Pekka Rinne, to be honest. Just even previous postseasons, like remember he had that great run where they went to the Cup Final, and then he was like really shaky in the Cup Final against the Penguins. And then, of course, this regular season has been really poor compared to Pekka Rinne's career standards. But do you think there's any appeal in that player? I lean UC Saros. I don't think Pekka Rinne should be playing, but your thoughts, Robbie?
That to me, I want to side with history here. And when you look at Pekka Rinne's stat line, just HockeyDB is a great one. You can see that his save percentage does fluctuate season to season. He'll have a beauty one, and then it'll come down. He'll have a beauty one, and then it'll come down. It's been going that way for quite some time. Now, the difference is he's 37 years old now. He'll be 38 in November. Tough. So I think Father Time is no longer on Rinne's side. That's where I have to say, Pete, and again, the only problem here is in our crystal ball is we've been predicting this for years, the decline of Rinne. It has not happened. You know, and Saros stepping up and taking over that job, it has not happened. So I think I'm going to go with the side of history here and say that, you know, if Saros might stumble out of the gate, it's going to go back to Rinne, and playing in front of that defense or playing behind that defense, I think he'll find his game.
I think he could. I'm a little doubtful, though. I think there's more appeal to drafting one of those two Nashville centers in either Duchesne, hopefully he plays center like he should be, I think, or Ryan Johansson. And even looking back, like I was diving into some past playoff numbers and guys who are close to a point per game in their playoff careers, like 15 plus games played. And Matt Duchesne is one of them. He's got 16 points in 18 games in the postseason and was really solid for Columbus. I mean, we all think back to Columbus last year and how they had just acquired Matt Duchesne at the deadline. Duchesne was not a great fit during the regular season, but a huge reason other than Bob why Columbus won that series. And besides their supporting cast, was like Duchesne really stepped up to the plate and delivered in that series.
Duchesne's a guy that I'm going to take advantage of in DFS formats. That's a great play when we go on the network, Pete, and we're making picks for these playoff games. Duchesne's going to be in my roster probably more often than not until they advance. Now, the reason I say that is because you're not going to hit on Duchesne every single night. He's a streaky guy. One night you're going to get the 2-goal stat line from him. The next three games you're going to get goose eggs from him. So in a playoff pool, that even out over a series, probably he's a big game player. But everything that I've seen from Duchesne since he was traded away from the Senators, I just haven't liked it. I haven't liked the consistency or the inconsistency for that matter. So I think if you're drafting him in a playoff pool, I like the bounce back appeal, but I'd much rather have that player in a DFS lineup where I can miss on one night and be, you know, kind of boosted up by the players around him than in a full series in a playoff pool format.
Right. And I think one thing for the bounce back guys, like don't exclude the veterans. I mean, whether it's Rinne, you were talking about Bobby Ryan a couple of years ago. That's a great thing to fall back on and just remind yourself that never rule out a player, even if he's having a bad season, if he's had a couple of bad seasons. I think this applies, this conversation, to guys like Jamie Benn, who has 30 points in 32 career playoff games. Also, Ilya Kovalchuk, 27 in 32 playoff games. I can't remember. When was the last time he was in the playoffs? With the Devils in like 2012 or something? It's been forever, but you see him the other day, right, boxing like a champ out there, getting ready for the season.
I mean, he's training to fight Svechnikov again, like Ovi did in the playoffs last year. That's what Kobe's looking like. He's looking like Triple G out there. He's going to knock someone out, whether he's scoring goals or not. So watch out for – that's a great sleeper pick, whether you're on the fighting docket or you're on the hockey docket. I like that one, Pete. That's an off-the-board one right there. So three lines right there for the Caps. I like that. But I think if I'm looking at a slam dunk bounce back guy, I'm going to turn the conversation to Brock Besser. I know he's on our list here, Pete. We're going to have a story out on NHL.com later today, which is Monday. And the reason I like Brock Besser, he doesn't actually have much playoff experience going back to juniors, which is concerning. However, he does have Elias Pettersson to set him up nicely. Elias Pettersson had 19 points in 13 games in the Swedish Hockey League playoffs as his first year in the men's league as a rookie. That to me is enough to say that Pettersson could raise his game enough to carry Brock Besser as well.
Nice. Maybe he's a big game Petey and we can, we can see the Canucks win at least around here, get to the playoffs for the first time in like what, 4 or 5 seasons. That would be like, that's one thing about Vancouver. Like you said, from Besser to the rookie Quinn Hughes and Pettersson, these guys have never played in the NHL playoffs before. And even though this is technically the qualifying round, like it's a postseason environment and it's a nice chance for those guys to get their feet wet and produce for fantasy pool owners. And then also, you know, I think get the Canucks where they need to be. They should win a round. I think we know they're capable of something like that.
Now, when it comes to you actually making these selections in a playoff format, are you going basically with these bounce back guys on teams that you're comfortable with, example, Dallas, like Sagan and Pavelski, or are you trying to hit more of a home run in a guy like Grubauer for Colorado? I know you like that team too. Like, I'll break it down. Pavelski and Sagan seem safe as bounce back candidates. Grubauer, he might not even have that number one job. So where is your drafting strategy? Is it a little bit more gambling oriented with Grubauer, or is it a little bit more safe and tried and true with Sagan and Pavelski?
I think you nailed it with the teams. I mean, like even Kovalchuk, whether he's on the third line or the second line or maybe some power play one, like the Caps are probably going to go a couple of rounds here. So I like that, him bouncing back from some underwhelming regular seasons the past few years. The Dallas guys are huge. I mean, Pavelski is a guy that I think if Dallas goes to the conference finals or the finals, I could see Pavelski scoring 10 plus goals for the Stars. That's not out of the realm. So it was only last year that he was an impact playoff performer. Remember, he came back from injury and scored in that game 7 against the Avs. And then, of course, last regular season, I think he scored 38 goals, which led the Sharks. So he's a little bit older this year, a little banged up, you know, but they have a clean slate here for everybody. He has had a chance to get some rest, I'm sure, and get back to full strength. So, yeah, I think Pavelski is a really good one because I do expect Dallas to go pretty far.
And not to take this whole show off the rails here, but going back, Pete, I remember you asked a question early on in the regular season. Is Joe Pavelski the reason why the Sharks aren't winning? And I think I refuted that by saying there's no way that, you know, Joe Pavelski at that age is the reason, and not having him is the reason that they were losing. That statement is very much true. You know, having a guy like that in the locker room, big goals. I know he didn't score a lot of them this year, but I think when you go into a playoff format, especially kind of a different one this season, I think that's when a guy like Joe Pavelski is going to be a big-time difference maker. So I'm right there with you. I would not hesitate to select this guy in a playoff format, and I would even say I would not hesitate to reach for this guy maybe a round or two higher than his average draft position.
He's the easiest way to get some of those shots to fall for Dallas, right? Whether it's Sagan or Klingberg from the point, and he's one of the best in the league still at his age, tipping the pucks into the net. You know, he's probably been working on stuff like that, all his tactics, probably against his garage or something during the pause or something. I'm sure he's staying active on that front. And yeah, when you really think about, like, remember when the Sharks were terrible earlier in the year but they were still kind of treading water. Like, they had that one stretch where they won like 4 out of 5 or something. Mm-hmm. They were right in the standings near teams like Nashville and Chicago. So when you think about the fact that it was an expanded 24-team playoff, tournament and the Sharks are not a part of it. I know Hurdle and Carlson got banged up, but I mean, they should probably be here, right? If Montreal is here, they should be here. So that's a, it's disappointing when you really think about it.
Yeah. If they had any better situation in net, they probably would have been. Last question I have here, for bounce backs, Alex Obrinkett is a guy on our list, Pete, who we saw explode onto the fantasy scene a season ago. Obviously, during this regular season, it wasn't the same show. Chicago, a riverboat gambler's best friend in the qualifying round here against the Edmonton Oilers. Do you like a guy like the Brinkat? Are you comfortable drafting him for a bounce back performance here?
Yeah, he's high end, man. You look back to his numbers last year. I mean, I think it's going to depend who he's playing with. I really do like that DeBrinkett-Strome combination, or even DeBrinkett-Kirby-Doc. I mean, those are some guys that if Chicago is going to take Edmonton the distance, which I think they have the capability of doing, those guys are going to be involved. And DeBrinkett has a chance if the Hawks, say, win a round and then fall out the next round. If he's playing, you know, something like 12 games, he has a potential to score 10 to 12 points in that stretch. So, right, the previous year he was 70-plus point guy. I mean, he's a really strong depth scorer for Chicago. We talk about the star power of Chicago against Edmonton, but it's going to come down to whether DeBrincat can bounce back and stuff like that, some of those supplementary guys, I think.
And if you look at the goalie column with those two teams specifically, I mean, I feel more comfortable with Corey Crawford in the postseason than I do a Mike Smith or a Mikko Koskinen, who is totally unproven in the postseason. Koskinen is. Now, Smith has had some good series going back with Arizona, but that was nearly a decade ago. When he was with the Flames last season, it wasn't enough to get them past the Avalanche. Now, they didn't have much scoring help either, but you know what? When it comes down to a tight scoring game, Chicago's got the experience. Crawford's got the experience in making a big third period stop. So that's another little storyline there. You know, I wouldn't say totally cool off on the Edmonton Oilers. That's not what I'm saying. But don't be surprised if Crawford steals a game or two, and then next game Alex Obrinkett comes out and scores a hat trick, and you know they could be take a little series lead there.
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding, right? You look at our top 25 goalie rankings. Neither Edmonton guy is there, and Corey Crawford is there with his sparkling 917 save percentage this year. It's pretty darn good. So yeah, we have him in at 24 in the rankings. 25th is Alex Stalock for the Minnesota Wild. That's just kind of a nod to how impressive he was in the regular season. That said, like looking at the Wild's goaltending, I think Kaapo Kähkönen is a legitimate threat to unseat either of those guys. And then another bounce back guy for sure would be Devan Dubnyk. Do you have any leaning on the Wild and where they're going to go? It's kind of an open competition and a crapshoot. Each of these guys have said it so far.
Pete, I like this three-goalie format in the regular season because I can come in on the waiver wire and get one of those guys to be on my fantasy roster to get a couple starts out of week-to-week matchup-wise. I hate it for the postseason. That's why people on Twitter say, no, Shesterkin should be in the top 10. Okay, but there's three goalies for the Rangers, and you don't know. Shesterkin falters in game one. Is Coach Quinn going to go back to him in game two? That's too complicated for me. I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to read Twitter more than I already do in the morning to find out if my goalie is starting or not. That's why in DFS, you know, you can get away with doing that. But in a playoff pool format, you absolutely cannot miss out on a pick like that. At the goaltender position, arguably the most important position in a playoff pool, you cannot feel comfortable taking a Stalock, a Shesterkin, a Gorgiev, a Lundqvist, a Kähkönen. No way. You'd be out of your mind to feel comfortable about doing something like that.
That's fair. And one thing I was actually thinking about a couple of days ago when I saw that picture of Lundqvist sitting in that pretty sick car. He was on the racetrack. Anyway, I was thinking, like, there's a legitimate chance that Lundqvist may never play another game for the Rangers. If he doesn't start in this series against Carolina, say they bow out or something, I mean, there is probably going to be a buyout window. And with him making $8-plus million a year with 1 year left on his contract, you really never know. So that begs the question, would they dare to play Lundqvist over Shesterkin? And I think that would be a mistake, but this is like the last chance to do it maybe before he might not be in a blue shirt uniform anymore.
That's a great point. And I think we're jaded because we do all live in New York here. And I think the talk around town, people still love Lundqvist. You see anytime there's a Rangers game, you see 30 jerseys everywhere all over the city. But yeah, it's a shrewd business, Pete. You're right. I mean, buyout window exists for a reason. to get rid of those high dollar contracts that are no longer returning value. So you heard it there first from Pete Jensen. Now, one more team I did want to talk about, Pete, in terms of goalie rankings, was their opponent in the Carolina Hurricanes. Mrazek was, he beat the Caps with less than a 900 save percentage in the first round of the playoffs last year. If you miss out on a goalie in the first couple rounds of a playoff pool, Mrazek's name's on the board. You feel comfortable about his chances of bouncing back and maybe having a solid postseason run?
I'm not so sure. I think the Rangers will win that series. And I think even if Mrazek advances, like you said, his numbers not may not be that good outside of the wins category. I do think James Reimer is a threat to him. Reimer's expected to come back and be healthy for this tournament. You don't know if he's actually going to start games, but if Mrazek has a couple of bad games, he probably will see the light of the day. I think when I compare Mrazek to another guy, like I would be more inclined to take even an elite timeshare guy over Peter Mrazek, who's like a lower tier starter for the playoffs, I think. I would lean Robin Lehner. I would lean Elvis Merzlikins. And this is not to be my number one goalie for the playoffs. You would anticipate to draft maybe one or two guys before that. Mm-hmm. But I just like that shot in the dark appeal that maybe Fleury falters and Leonard carries the Golden Knights all the way or something like that. So, and Merzlikins was as good as Shesterkin or any other rookie goalie this year. Mm-hmm. So like I lean those guys over Mrazek, who's been a little spotty over the years.
The reason why I would make an outside case for Mrazek here, and I've never stuck my knockout for the player before ever. Mm-hmm. The reason why I think it's slightly different this season and in this format specifically is because those games against the Rangers are win or lose. I mean, you have to win or die. I mean, you have to win those games. Yeah. It's a pressure situation, and goalies need that experience. Versus you've got Holtby, you've got Fleury, you've got these guys kind of, you know, going around in these seeding games. I mean, those games, you know, for they don't matter, really. They don't. There's no implication. You can lose every one of them. Doesn't matter. Boo-hoo. You're still going to play in the postseason. Versus Mrazek, he's got to win. He's got to come up with a big stop. And they end up beating the Rangers, one of the best offensive teams in fantasy this season. Don't you think he's going to come out a little bit more confident, a little bit more swagger in a step heading into playing one of those seeding teams in the opening round of the postseason?
Yeah, I think so. I think the desperation level is going to be there 110% for all these teams in the qualifying round and then the round robin. Yeah, like you said, even if the Flyers overachieve or Dallas overachieves and wins the round robin, they might still not get matched up against a favorable opponent, depending on which teams upset the other or which teams take care of business, right? So, yeah, I think it's interesting to think of it like that. And that's what you have to kind of like put the circumstances, you try to be in their shoes and how they might be feeling and how, you know, because the circumstances are so different this time around. It's not where you can, those round robin games, like, and also they're going to be against like really good teams like Carter Hart. If you're thinking about drafting him, I mean, he's going to have to play three games in a row against the Capitals, Lightning and Bruins. I don't like the idea of his save percentage in that stretch if that counts in your fantasy pool.
Well, the thing is too, I mean, take the Caps, for example, in that seeding round, they can experiment with line combinations. They can get new looks on the power play. They can treat that as almost practice games, exhibition games. That's what those are for those teams. It doesn't matter. Now, for Carolina, they can't be screwing around with the line combinations. They've got to go best line combinations, heavy minutes, heavy hitting in each of those games. They're going to be ready to go. So I like a team like Carolina to make another deep run. The only thing that I think is going to hurt those teams that do have to play those meaningful five-game series, I think that they're going to run out of steam by, you know, whether it's the Eastern Conference Final or the Western Conference Final. I think that's when you're going to start to see it catch up to them. But I guarantee you one of those play-in teams, they're going the distance in each conference, one of those. I'm not sure who it is just yet. I'm not ready to make that call, but I guarantee that's going to benefit them greatly.
Interesting to think about food for thought going into this first round of the playoffs. For Carolina, I mean, they're really strong on defense. Do you think that either Hamilton fell a little bit in our rankings compared to the season long for the playoffs, but is a really attractive option if Carolina beats the Rangers in the first round. Same goes for Jacob Slavin, and he's a guy that's going to be playing monster minutes, could score that one postseason last year. Wasn't he like their leading scorer or something? He had like, I can't remember, but he had double-digit points in like 15 games because they went to the conference final. So that's really valuable in a slim defenseman market for these playoff pools. Do you like Carolina if you think they might beat the Rangers against the odds? I don't know.
Big time. I mean, I have Dougie Hamilton on our list as eighth overall among playoff defensemen. The reason why he's not any higher is because he had a gruesome injury. Otherwise, he'd be right there in the top three, you know, regardless of the situation. That's how good he is. But I cannot say I have no indication of how bad that injury actually was for him, of how limited his skating is now. I have no idea. We just have to go on what we read. So until we see him take the ice in that first game, Pete, I think everyone's kind of be grasping at straws. If you want to go with a safer player, I think you mentioned it with Slavin. You don't have that gruesome injury concern that you do with Hamilton, but you have a lot less upside.
What do you think about some of these other defensemen? Like we had some really good debates in the 20 to 25 range about some of these guys, like Ryan Ellis for Nashville, in the hope that, like we were saying about the other guys, Ryan Ellis in the regular season was top 10 among defensemen in points per game, which is really impressive. He's been good for so many years. Also, Shea Weber, you could probably get in the 21 to 25 range if you're one of those people that are thinking Montreal could stun the Penguins and this could be a crapshoot of a playoffs, unpredictable, where the bottom-seeded team upsets the top-seeded team like what happened last year. So that would make Weber really attractive.
For Ellis, the reason why I'm concerned about his postseason performance is because of his track record. He's gone 5 postseasons out of 6 total without scoring a goal. That's not going to get it done for you in fantasy.
Right.
The one postseason he succeeded in was 2016-17. He had 13 points in 22 games. That'll get it done for you in fantasy. However, this year specifically with the Predators and the way that team is lined up, they don't have forwards that can put the puck in the net. The only player that's putting the puck in the net and assisting is the one-man band, number 59, Roman Josi. So when I'm looking at Nashville, if I don't have Roman Josi, I'm not drafting. Sorry, that's just the way it is. You know, and would it shock me to see them advance the Western Conference Final? No. But there's no way I feel comfortable winning a postseason format with 3 or 4 Nashville Predators on my roster.
The tough thing with Josi is that you're probably going to have to reach for him because he's so renowned this season. People know that he's close to a point per game among defensemen, that he deserves to be taken up high near Victor Hedman and John Carlson. So honestly, I would steer clear. It's no knock on Josi. It's just I don't trust Nashville to go any further than the first or second round, to be honest. And then as we look deeper in the defenseman rankings, like one name that comes out is Adam Fox. I mean, if the Rangers win multiple rounds, could he take over on power play one for Tony DeAngelo? That's a trend that maybe could have happened next year, next regular season, if the Rangers had missed the playoffs, right? Tony D might take a little dip from his career season, and Adam Fox just keeps getting better every single game. So what's your take on that defenseman look? Because it's kind of like the goaltending. It's a three-headed monster with those two guys in Trouba.
High skill, high upside, but I would take a pass. The reason why is the lack of playoff experience for a rookie defenseman. Got to be the worst time to be considered in fantasy. There's just no way that you can produce at an elite level as a rookie. I mean, Quinn Hughes, that's an exception. Kale McCarr, that's an exception. However, if that's not your first and last name, you're not going to produce at that level. It's just not going to happen, especially when you have guys like Tony DeAngelo, Trouba, who could race his game any single night. Wouldn't surprise anybody. So it's not a knock on Fox. I think it's just going to take some time. In that range, Pete, in the 30 range, where I would feel comfortable drafting is absolutely a guy like Colton Parayko, is a Ryan Suter. Guys like that, that log big minutes, physical guys, they're not going to get lost in the mix and the physicality, and they're still going to produce a little bit offensively.
Yeah, Suter wasn't he like 45, 50 points this year or something like that? Very close to 50 points. So, yeah, and Minnesota has so much veteran savvy when you really think about it. Their defense is strong, has been around the block many times. You got Parisi, you got Suter, you got Eric Staal, some of these names. I mean, they match up really well from an experience standpoint against the Vancouver Canucks. So that'll be really interesting to look at. You were talking about Kale McCarr and how he made that instant impact last year in the playoffs. He scored a goal on one of his first shifts, lightning upside. Colorado's goaltending, though, is like we actually had Francois ranked a lot higher initially than Grubauer. But then I think you raised the point. You're like, hey, that's a toss-up, man. We should really have them next to each other. And that's what we ended up doing. I like that viewpoint from you.
Well, it's just like, especially with a team like the Avalanche, it's such a sound team front to back in the roster that it doesn't really, it's not, their success is not going to hinge on the goalie. And that's what makes a great team. You know, you're going to have Grubauer elevate his game one night or Francois elevate his game one night and steal the show. But otherwise, it's going to be Nate MacKinnon. It's going to be Captain Gabe. It's going to be Cale Makar on the back end, even Eric Johnson. They've got a lot of solid options. There's Zadorov's another guy that can chip in a couple points too on the back end. So I think when you look at Colorado, Pete, you know, drafting a guy like Grubauer over Francois isn't crazy. I would still give the edge to Francois just ever so slightly. But hey, I mean, if Bednar goes with Grubauer in game one and it's his net to lose, he's probably not losing it.
And remember too, like these regular season trends could be out the window, whether it's for a D'Angelo or for a Francois, who was one of the best waiver wire pickups. But you look at how good Grubauer was last postseason. I'm checking it out now. 7-5, 925 save percentage, and one shutout. That's pretty darn good, man. So, yeah, Grubauer, if he comes in, he is a bounce-back candidate. That's why we're talking about him here. Mm-hmm. We pegged him as a breakout. We thought he was ready to take that next step and play, you know, 55 games this year. It didn't happen in the regular season because of injuries and production trends and Francois' break broke out. But, yeah, I think Grubauer is poised to redeem himself here this postseason. And the ceiling of Colorado is at the top. They could hoist the trophy at the very end. We all believe that.
And one comment here on Tony D, it's sort of the same logic I used for Adam Fox, but the record just isn't there in the postseason. I'm all for the 5-point night games in the regular season. Sign me up for that, especially because he was on my fantasy team. I'll take that. However, this is not the regular season. You guys have guys 220-pound forwards skating down at full speed, coming into the corner. You think Tony DeAngelo is going to engage? I don't think so. Not happening. Not against a guy like Tom Wilson. Not against a guy like Ovi. You need a guy like Dennis Seidenberg back there in the corner to get that puck and get it out of the zone. So that's my only worry. That's my only reason why I didn't have Tony D in the top 15. I just don't think that this postseason format suits those guys yet. They're going to find a way to play. They're going to find a way to dig in deep, put some points up eventually. But I think this is the time where Jacob Trouba is honestly the safest option for the Rangers just because he knows what it takes. He knows how to get physical. He can play that postseason style. I don't know if the league is changing, you know, style-wise, but that's the way the playoffs have been played, at least for the past 10 or 15 years. So that's why I would go with more of those tried and true guys.
It's true, man. You think about, like, some of these offensive defensemen over the years, names that come to mind, Kevin Shattenkirk, Shane Goss, to spare, their value diminishes in the playoffs because all of a sudden you have a couple of bad shifts here and there. It costs your team a really meaningful goal, and then your coach plants you on the bench and says, mm-hmm. you know, we can't afford that right now. We'd rather have the third pair defenseman out there for an important shift. Because he's more viable defensively. So that's something where if a guy's one-sided and one-dimensional in the playoffs, like you said, it could really burn your team.
And on that logic, that's why I'm really sold on a guy like John Klingberg in the postseason, because that team is safe, Dallas is. Now, John Klingberg had a bad regular season for fantasy, minus 10, only 32 points in 58 games. But mark my words, Klingberg is going to be a big-time point producer for that Dallas Stars team in the postseason. That's a guy I have no questions about, you know, and that's my drafting strategy. When I'm going in these postseason drafts, I do not want to have a laundry list of, well, is it going to be this? Is it going to be that? I want to know this guy's going to get it done. Might be a little bit inconsistent, but I'm going to go with this guy over the course of time.
Right. Does a guy have a chance, a likelihood of going deep in the playoffs like Klingberg? Absolutely. Does he have the high offensive ceiling from years past? Absolutely. Does he have bounce back appeal? And could he end up being maybe, let's say, the highest scoring defenseman in the entire postseason? Does he have that capability, Klingberg? Yes, absolutely. So that's checks your boxes there in terms of having a short memory and not dwelling too much on the down regular season and you know, taking advantage of that clean slate for fantasy.
I also, before we wrap up today, I wanted to talk quickly about injury bounce backs. I know we talked about Jake Guentzel previously on the show. We brought up Dougie Hamilton a little bit ago. Guys like that that were so elite in fantasy, Pete, but then suffered real bad injuries. Put Tarasenko on that list as well. When you're on the clock and you've got to make a decision and a guy like Guentzel's on the board, his name's right there, it's hard to not look at that name and select it. Is there any reason why you would be a little bit concerned about taking one of those high-value fantasy names based on their pretty bad injury during the regular season?
Well, of course, it's worth. That's why you don't do your fantasy drafts right now. You maybe do them, you know, if the season's going to start in late July, early August. You do it like a week before the season starts. Once you figure it out, or you join any pool, if you join the Sportsnet pool in Canada or something like that, you don't select your roster and finalize, lock things up until you know how a guy's feeling in training camp. And these guys will have a full training camp. They will have probably an exhibition game or two to get their feet wet. And then you make the decision. I mean, I think on paper, look at Jake Guentzel. He is third in playoff points per game, minimum 25 games among active players. And then he's tied for first in playoff goals per game, active players with 25 plus games with Mark Scheifele. You wouldn't expect that, right? Mark Scheifele and Jake Guentzel at the top. But we know Guentzel has won the cup before and has delivered multiple times, 10 plus goals in a single postseason. Tarasenko actually on that goals per game leaders, active players, is fifth with 0.47. So all of a sudden there are a couple of names there. Mikko Rantanen is another one I was looking at, players close to a point per game in their careers. He's got like 18 and 18 or something like that, point per game. And he's coming off an injury. We expect him to be back and playing with MacKinnon again. So yeah, all those names, I think, monitor them closely in training camps and then pull the trigger when you need to, because those guys are worth the risk.
As long as I read a story saying that Guentzel is going to be in the lineup in that first game, I don't have concerns. You know, is there the inherent risk that there is a reoccurring injury problem? Maybe, you know, but you could say that in the regular season too. So I think, you know, just to kind of put a bow on the injury bounce back thing, you know, read the news, do your due diligence, but don't go crazy. Don't be putting these guys in the first round. Don't be putting these guys in the top of the second round. Go with the tried and true. I know it's a little bit boring, a little bit of a sleepy strategy, but if this is your money, you're putting it on the line, be safe with it.
Yeah, and like you said, I remember you saying in the preseason when we did our sleeper list, you were like, don't draft all five of these guys. Pick one or two of them if they fall in your draft. I mean, don't draft a team with your goalie, Philip Grubauer, and then your top two forwards, Tarasenko and Guentzel or Rantanen, you know, like try to spread it out, pick your spots with these guys. If Rantanen falls, then obviously is a no-brainer. Tarasenko might fall even further back, you know, despite that shoulder injury concern. But yeah, I think mixing and matching and getting one or two of those guys dealing with injury. Otherwise, it's just too big of a risk. You know, you can't take Hamilton, Grubauer, and Tarasenko all on the same pool roster.
One last question. This is just off the cuff here.
Yeah.
NHL draft lottery is on June 26th, just a couple days away now. Do you think just a gut feeling for Lafreniere, is it a better situation for him in Detroit or Ottawa, fantasy-wise?
I would say short-term, Detroit, just because he could play like – you know, he could play with Mantha or Larkin or both. You never know. So I think Detroit could get a lot better in one season with him. Ottawa, I think, has some problems at the core of the roster, the organization, that it's going to take some time for them to develop into a, you know, a high caliber offensive team. Whereas I think Detroit already is one. They just, like, Mantha got injured for a large portion of the season. You know how it is, like Colorado years back. You could have a talented offense and you start losing games, you have a couple injuries, and you could be the worst team in the league. Like, the NHL is relentless like that. I think fantasy-wise, like, you could see it, like, Detroit having, like, multiple 70-point guys next season. I don't think anyone would be surprised by that if they stay healthy.
No, and just a kind of a light note stat here. Detroit won five games. Five on the road this season, 5-26 and three. So let that sink in for a moment. I mean, that does not have a good ring to it. But I think I would agree, Pete. I think fantasy-wise, Lafreniere, Detroit, man, you know, Zadina would be a nice sleeper pick again next year. Bertuzzi would, you know, is coming into his own role here in fantasy, kind of being a jack of all trades. Roenick on the back end. You know, that team, you know, could be something decent. And even fighting for, you know, an eighth seed next season. And, you know, compared to what they did last season, it would be an epic story, too, for the league. So,
and look at that team on some nights, like lightning in a bottle. They beat the Boston Bruins twice this year. So who knows? I mean, they may be closer than people think. But, yeah, Filip Hronek, I'll go take two on him as a sleeper next year. I was high on him this year. He put up the points per game in the range of what we expected. But, let's see. The draft lottery finally has a date and a time later this week. So we're excited about that. And then we could start to break down some of these rookies and these draft prospects. Robbie.
If you got any more questions or your playoff pool drafts are coming soon, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at NHL Reese. Pete's at NHL Jensen. Our producer Bobby's at Aircheck too for some gambling tips as well. So don't hesitate to hit us up. We're still going at this thing pretty much 24/7 here.
And there was an interesting idea that someone had. They're deciding their fantasy regular season playoffs in a fantasy pool for the postseason for the whole 24-team tournament, which is – I know the fantasy regular season ended on kind of a whimper, right, because a lot of league playoffs got canceled. Maybe some team ended up winning that won the regular season. It's not really the exciting, exhilarating thing that you're used to in trying to win your playoff tournament. So that's maybe an idea to get your league going again, join a pool or put together a pool by hand, whatever you want to do, and decide it that way, kind of have a redraft for the playoffs.
No doubt. I like that, Pete. And throw us a 5-star review too if you're liking these kind of playoff preview episodes. We'll keep them coming. Hopefully we got some more news here soon and, you know, maybe some cool practice insights when these teams start getting together and getting things underway here.
Definitely looking forward to it. Check out the other podcasts in the podcast network, Draft Class with Kimmelman and Morial, and At the Rink with Sean Rourke, Dan Rosen. Good stuff from them lately. So again, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, follow us on Twitter at NHL Reese, NHL Jensen, and we'll talk to you again next time here on NHL Fantasy on Ice.